Hey, you ready?
Yeah.
Go ahead and call the meeting to order. Roll call, Joe Stratman, looks like he's on.
Here.
There, thank you. Joni?
Here.
Jim?
Here.
And I do not see Heather yet. Marlene?
Here.
Cindy?
Here.
And myself, Jared. Do I have a motion to approve the February 25, 2026 hospital board agenda?
I'll move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Do I have approval for the January 29, 2026 hospital board minutes?
No.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Visitor comments?
Chairman Jared and the board, Roy Roundtree here with Bedford North. We're sitting in here, and Kate Incarnato is on the call today too. We're, if you have any questions with regard to the new project or in any way, we're kind of hanging out, seeing, observing tonight. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Roy. Any other comments? Board member comments?
Just had a quick, I just wanted to really thank Elizabeth Hart. I know she retired January 31st, but it's amazing the work she's done and her sticking around to help with Scopes Clinic that first week of February after retirement date just speaks to how much she cares about the community and the medical center. She's pretty amazing and we'll miss her a bunch.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Just an acknowledgement of Katie Holmland as well and getting selected for one of the top 40 in Alaska, under 40. Congratulations, Katie. You put a ton of effort into it, and it's showing in the program results, so I appreciate that.
Thank you. Any other visitor, or any other board member comments? Non committee reports, resource.
Yes, for our resource committee, we talked about it being a busy time of year due to inpatient volumes, changes in long-term care population, the Scopes Clinic and Health Fair lab tests. Inpatient volumes are a little light compared to last year, and revenue is a bit lighter compared to budget. Long-term care revenue is strong compared to budget, and we did rebase costs last year, so that's probably influences revenues. The clinic is under budget, but it's higher than last year. The MRI is not available for scheduling at present, so it isn't generating revenue yet. And as part of that, we are still awaiting the state's determination on our certificate of need. We continue to work on old accounts that were unpaid, and staff has collected on some of these. Some were written off, though there are some nuances on how those were handled. Jason may choose to explain that a little bit further. Our grant revenues took a bit of a dip this year, which may reflect national funding priorities and programs. As you heard Phil talk on the radio today, we do plan to apply for grants to boost telehealth, early childhood, behavioral health, and other programs. And we're working that on part of the rural health transformation program proposals, but we don't have dollar amounts determined for those as yet. Expenses compared to budgets are a bit up a bit this past month. Contract labor costs are up. Repairs and maintenance remain consistent, and we may be owed some funds, and we will need to see how the cost report shapes up. The cost report is how Medicare determines if a hospital has been over or underpaid reimbursement. And one interesting and positive note is that the staff is working with two other hospitals in the state to develop RFPs that would hopefully get us better rates for supplies and reduce our costs. And as for funds in reserve, we still have a strong position. There is even the potential to move some of the funds into longer term investments for the future. And in general, our balance sheet looks good, and days cash on hand continue to rise. They're currently at 134, which is an increase of from last month, which was 123. And our days in AR are coming down, but our numbers fall within the range of industry standards.
Any questions on that report? Thank you, Cindy. Long-term care quality?
Long-term care quality committee met on the 18th.
And most of the time was spent discussing the issue of who can be admitted to long-term care. And regardless of what the source of paying for the days in long-term care, the federal government determines whether someone does or does not qualify to be in a long-term care unit. And the criteria don't necessarily match the needs of people that we see, the staff sees in our community. So the discussion was if there were any steps policy-wise that could be taken so that Petersburg Medical Center can serve people that need to be in long-term care.
Questions regarding that? Thank you for that report, Marlene. And yes, go
ahead. Very quick question, Marlene. So is there, that last point, is there ongoing discussion then regarding policy? And
I defer to Jennifer. Sorry.
This is Jennifer Brainer. We do have ongoing discussion and we are in policy development.
Infection prevention and control quality.
Yeah, this is Joe, and can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I actually attended infection prevention meetings on December 17th of 2025, and I wasn't at the last meeting, so I didn't report out on that. And then I attended the recent infection control meeting in February 18th. I'll just go over those notes. It's more recent. We heard from Aaron at Public Health that about an update on measles nationwide. It's increasing. It's in 24 states, over 900 cases. And Public Health also mentioned that there's a reproductive health clinic that should happen in the early spring. We got an infection control update from Rachel, mentioning that infection prevention specialist from the state will be touring the facility and providing recommendations soon. Went over the action item list and then also went over reports, environment of care, portable conditions, hand hygiene, antibiotic stewardship, a lot of the usual stuff, employee health vaccine update, environmental services, and then went through the roundtable, and he talked about the scope clinic and pediatric vaccines were also discussed. And that's about what I have in my notes. Thank you.
Questions for Joe? Thank you, Joe. Radiology. Did we have any questions or comments regarding the radiology report? Yes, Marlene.
When someone is hired to be the MRI technician, is it likely that they will be full-time busy with the MRI, or are they going to, you're hoping to hire somebody that also can do other ultrasound and CAT scan and X-rays?
Sonny's not on. I can probably answer that because we actually discussed that exact situation. The way the industry is, the MRI is pretty specialized. So when we have a contractor that we'll be hiring through a contracting agency, they'll come up and they'll work specifically with MRI and get us going. Sonia will be training with another staff member as well to also cross train to provide that service in-house. And we'll develop it from there, but it may actually be the case that as the service grows, we may need to have a separate staffing model with that, depending on what the need is. And so we'll just have to wait a little bit on that. But a contractor will come up as a locum for a period of time. It's not a full-time staff, it's a contractor, so we'll be able to look and see what the needs are at that time. I'm not an expert in this, and I know we've talked about that, but one of the bigger issues I think that we're going to be running up against is not necessarily the tech, but prior authorizations and insurance-based kinds of authorizations that'll be a dedicated staff member will have to work through to make sure we get that. So,
does for MRI tech, do they need a special certification, or can they just need to have the training? And one of your X-ray techs can.
Yeah, it's a good question. And again, I'm gonna say what Sonia told me because she's the expert. But in the state of Alaska, you do not need an actual certification to run an MRI. But we want to follow the standards of best practice.
Any other questions on that report? Thank you, Sonia, for that report. Lab report. Any questions regarding that report that Violet wrote?
If you don't mind, Violet's here. She'll...
Violet Chimick, Lab. Just summarize the report, I guess. We are finally fully staffed. This is the first time that we've been having no vacancies, which is super exciting. And one of our laboratory technicians recently passed her ASCP certification, so now she is also a laboratory scientist. As many people know, we are also doing health fair blood draws. We're in the middle of it. So it's going quite well. We're really thankful for all the volunteers that we've had for phlebotomy, and also a shout out to Dietary, who have been providing snacks every morning for people. It's been very well received by everyone. We had our CLIA survey back in November. We had two surveyors this time, which is different than our usual one. She was training a new surveyor. So they were super in-depth, more than usual, but they only found two findings, none of which really impacted patient care. It was more documentation things, which were a bit more intense than they usually look at, but we have that corrected basically on site when they were there. As far as facility, we are looking into a new chemistry analyzer. Our current one is at end of life. We're in the final stages of signing the contract for reagents and everything. Hope to bring it in by the end of the year. It'll allow us to expand our test menu in-house, which will be nice. It'll include the vitamin Ds, which right now we're sending out for health fair. Hopefully in 2 years, we'll run them all in-house and everything will be reported same day. And financial wellness, we continue to work on the prior auth process, much like radiology. And we're meeting with HIM coding to help kind of reduce claim denials by insurance companies. So that's
the new analyzer, will it be able to lease to own?
I believe it'll be a capital purchase. Yeah. So.
Any other questions for Violet? Thank you, Violet, for that report. Long-term care. Helen.
Helen Boggs, long-term care. We've had a tough couple months. We've had 8 residents that have discharged. And it's been a pretty big roller coaster for our staff and just like productivity as well as just emotional, you know, toll we've had coming in and then a lot going out, unfortunately. So we're kind of in a little lull right now. I had some potentials, and then we're just kind of dealing with level of care, whether they meet long-term care, which, as Marlene kind of mentioned, it's a little bit tough, you know, and then also having the financial portion of it, which is tough as well. So our staffing will likely change due to this change in our census. We're looking at that every day and what we need, and if we need, you know, to send people home or keep them, depending on how our acute side looks as well. We're looking at new equipment. Jennifer and I are going to head to Michigan on Sunday to go check out the Stryker warehouse. We're hoping to get some new beds and bedside tables and just kind of get our equipment up to date. And that's kind of all I've got aside from my report there.
Anyone have any questions for Helen regarding the report?
Yes.
What is DON? What is DON?
Director of Nursing.
Oh, okay, we got those plurals. Do you normally replace all the beds at one time or so many a year type thing?
Typically, we've had ours for, I'm really terrible with time frames, but it feels like a while, yeah. And, you know, they're used all the time, so it's just, you know, our maintenance folks are awesome. They're fixing the beds all the time, and some of them are just no longer able to be fixed, so.
I had one question I wanted to ask, just bring out, and it sounds like we had an inspection and had like three, would you say, minor, mid-level, whatever?
I would say they were pretty minor.
Minor?
Yeah. I mean, the biggest one in my area was the staffing board, which I feel like was a little bit of a stretch. You know, when you walk into long-term care or the hospital in general, it tells you who the nurses that are working, and we have to have the hours that they're working. We have to make sure it's updated based on who's coming and going. If somebody goes home sick, we have to update that. And so it's just, it was a little bit of a nitpicky citation, I think. As far as citation goes, that's a pretty good one to have.
And then these same people left us with a new case outbreak of COVID?
They did. They both ended up having COVID, both surveyors. So they were only on site for, one was there for one day and the other left at like 3 o'clock on the second full day. And then they did the rest of it virtually, so me sending in information.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Patient financial services. By Carrie, any questions regarding Carrie's report?
What is the remote billing team? Is that just the people at offsite?
Yeah, and Carrie's on PTO this week.
Yeah,
when we took over the billing function for TruBridge HRG, that functionality, the majority of the billers are remote, so they're offsite. Still part of PMC, but it's a good portion of them offsite.
Any other questions regarding that report? Thank you, Carrie, for that report. New facility. Justin, did you have anything regarding this report?
Good afternoon, everyone. Justin Wetzel, you hear me all right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, just to kind of give an update on the site work. Up there, we did submit the final, what we hope to be the final submittal to ADEC on the SWIP plan, the closing out of the future hospital site. We addressed all other questions, concerns, and hopefully that's wrapped up with their final response, and we can close that out. In terms of the work building, we did do quite a bit of work, a lot of basically the UPS system was finally connected. We did initially have the power conditioner had an item that needed to be repaired, so it took a little bit longer than we kind of planned originally, but as of Monday we did have the power conditioner repaired and the UPS is fully installed and functioning, so all of those things are taken care of. That's about it on the work building. Everything else is 100% complete from the base contract. And then on the new hospital design, we worked through basically an updated concept site plan. And that was part of this attachment there. Part of this report had that attachment in it. And also put in here some square footage analysis. It's basically a comparison chart. It shows the existing hospital square footage, the original proposed 35% design, which was one combined building, and then the new proposed concept, which has an enlarged expanded long-term care center with additional rooms, and then also has an additional build out on the hospital side. So each one of those long-term care is about 5,000 square foot larger than what was on the original 35% schematic. And then the hospital would have about 3,500, 3,800 square foot larger, primarily in imaging and clinic. So that's just kind of a kind of where we started and kind of where we're at now with this concept in terms of the entire campus build out. Any questions on any of that so far?
I just want to point out that UPS stands for uninterrupted power supply.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah, it's essentially it's the battery case. It's a cabinet with a series of a lot of batteries to allow the magnet to continue operation through a brownout that would allow the generator to come online and start delivering power before it took back over. We also installed those for the servers and also for the vaccine fridge. So basically all those critical components got battery backup that basically acts as an interim while the generator gets warmed up and starts delivering power back to the building.
Any questions for Justin?
Are you always floating on the batteries, or they just cut in when they're needed?
Sorry, I didn't quite hear the question.
Are you for the ups? Are you always floating on the batteries using the inverter, or do you only cut over when there's a power issue?
It's just on an event of a power failure. The generator. A generator isn't, even with an automatic transfer switch, it's not an immediate instant
right
delivery of power. Basically there's a lag that happens basically once the power to the building goes out. There's an initiation and startup phase for the generator, glow plugs, and it doesn't actually deliver power until it hits the correct temperatures. So it's not always required for critical components, but in this case it creates basically a fault where specifically on the power conditioner for the magnet that protects it from electrical surges, it basically it puts it in lockout mode, which, you know, in the event of like a weekend or something, you wouldn't want that. So this is there basically ready to take over instantly during a power outage.
Thank you.
That answer your question?
Any other questions for either Justin or Roy regarding the new facility? Thank you, Justin.
Thanks.
Quality. Any questions or anything with the report regarding from Stephanie? CNN. Thank you for that report, Stephanie. Infection prevention. Do we have any comments or questions regarding the report Rachel put out? Rachel, for that report. Executive summary.
Okay, thank you. Submitted my report, and since the report was submitted, a couple of verbal updates. The legislative fly-in was last week, so I was in Juneau and spent most of the week there, and had productive meetings, getting a sense of what the landscape is on the legislative side. I had the opportunity to meet with Senator Stedman, Senator Giesel's staffer, and a number of other representatives and senators, a total of 8 throughout the day. On Thursday, and I was able to talk about the capital needs request for the replacement facility. I had a 1-page handout. Thank you to Roy and Roy's team to developing that handout, and to Katie to bringing it there. And we were able to get an updated schematic on the phases and the needs and the request. So There was some interest in on the RHTP funding, the Rural Health Transformation Fund, and what projects we'll be doing. And so I talked about two specific projects, one with direct primary care and a payer model, which I know there's a lot of interest in the legislative on how that would necessarily potentially transform healthcare. So I focused on that. And I also talked about interoperability and technology and some of the challenges we have with our current systems. And that should be, that could potentially be a legislative function to bring at a higher level. So basically, PMC is still faxing and scanning or receiving faxing and scans with other facilities because the electronic health records don't actually talk together. They don't interface properly or integrate properly, and that's a technology heavy lift. And I think that there should be an opportunity at the state to recognize that and maybe potentially use some of those funds to do something with that at a state level. And then, of course, with RHTP funds, there's no the construction of a new facility or replacement facility, as we're doing, is not covered. So I did a lot of advocacy with each one of those representative and legislators to speak on pushing and maybe talking with a delegation, a federal delegation, to allow for that at least for the next tranche, the next year, next fiscal year, to allow for that specifically with our project. There's definitely a positive reception and awareness that that's a big need within the funding. And but there was a lot of questions, more questions than answers, of course, at this point. And then we had the Alaska Hospital and Healthcare Association meeting on Wednesday, and we got an update from the state, and we got to meet as a hospital group and discuss the big bulk of that conversation was also the RHTP funding and discussions of how to work together on making sure those funds get spent properly and making sure that we're all aligned as a hospital association and with the state and working together on that. A lot of the regulation and requirement that is going to come with that funding comes from CMS, the Center for Medicaid and Medicare, and they're the ones who define the regulation. The state is very supportive of a lot of the hospitals. We are aligned with initiatives, and we're trying to work together to make sure that that's a seamless transition. That spend has to happen within, I think, 24 months or 14 months. I can't remember. Katie's on, she can have the details on that, but it's a quick spend on the first each year of that tranche coming through. The other thing that I noted, I sat in on a committee hearing with Health and Social Services, the Senate hearing, and the fiscal agent for that is the community foundation, the Alaska Community Foundation. And they had spoke about how the funding gets dispersed. And one of the things that's a challenge is it's supposed to be a transformation fund of 5 years, but we can't put in 4 or 5 years for an innovation. It's each year you have to resubmit. So there's no guarantee that if you're having an innovation project on the first year, that it would necessarily get funded for the second year. And you know, there's logic behind that because you know, how do you know that's going to pan out for 5 years? And so you have to go back and reapply. So that's just interesting as the logistics of the funding dispersion and how that gets spent is going to be handled. And I think it's going to be interesting and challenging at the same time. So I want to thank Katie. Katie's Bryson has been probably up on many, many nights working through the regs and the requirements and getting the letter of intent together, which we are now required to, or which we are, is now open. The portal is now open and we'll be submitting. I think it's the closing date is March 11th. So it's a quick closing date. So. And Katie, I see you're on. If you want to edit or comment anything I said, feel free to go off on mute, and I'll let you.
No, just endorsing. Sorry, I'm in Georgia. We just wrapped up a different grantee meeting today, so it's a little late here. But I think the one thing you were mentioning is just the spend down speed, which is the funds that the state has through the end of October this year to obligate, which is the full $273 million. Will then need to be spent by the end of September 2027. So these LOIs that are being submitted now by March 11th, those hopefully will be funded in short order. So ideally by April or May, but possibly by the end of the state fiscal year in more like June, which would give us maybe not just us, but every hopeful subgrantee about 14 months to spend down our full amount, which really puts us, of course, in a tension of we want to deliver on transformation. We also have so many projects that strongly align with the principles of this funding, and we have to do it in very short order so we can be successful and apply again for the following year, which of course starts in November. So you know, it's a lot all at once, and we really look forward to reporting back to you next month with all of those concrete dollar amounts and progress there.
Thank you. I just want to, I'm switching topics a little bit, but the MRI, the certificate of need, we had the hearing on February 4th. If I recall that correctly. And I just want to thank the community that called in to testify. It was very meaningful. And actually, it was really great to hear from me. You know these things about the MRI. You know you're providing a service. You know that it's challenging to travel. You know it costs a lot of money, and you know it delays care when you have to go outside of our service unit or our community to receive that care. But hearing those things firsthand, we had 29 people call in. There was a lot of common threads on the challenges of getting an MRI, whether it was a diagnosis that wasn't necessary, or whether it was a diagnosis that was necessary and it delayed care. It was just really kind of enlightening to hear those firsthand. And so I want to thank the community for taking the time to do that. It was very meaningful. And I'm hoping to get a response here in the next 30 days or so. Let's see, anything else? Any other questions while I'm thinking about anything else I need to report out? I do want to mention the specialties. I did this on KFSK as well. We have Dr. Sankas here, who's our psychiatrist. He does telepsychiatry. It's really nice to see him in person. He comes a couple of times a year to provide in-person visits with patients, and then also did a training today with our medical staff. That was excellent. We had our scope clinic, which thank you to Jennifer, Helen, and the team putting that together. I know it's a heavy lift also in our facility to do, and getting those back on. I think we have another one already scheduled. Is that right?
April 2nd.
April 2nd. So amazing to get that back on. We have optometry clinic coming up next week. Dr. Kapp is returning. And we had Dr. Harrison, I believe I reported that last time, providing a rotation here, just a locum lobe rotation, and also seeing endocrinology patients. And Cameron French from dermatology will be coming this spring. So those are kind of the updates on the specialties, and we're continuing to increase and focus on those for patient care. I think that's all I had.
Facilities management shout out.
Facility for
the Facilities Management Appreciation Month.
Oh, of course. That's always. I thought there was Cindy. Sir, of course. And that's a no-brainer. Facilities management shout out. Facilities is always a shout out. I don't need to say that to you, Wolf. Do I? No.
Well, recognize Wolf Anskip
publicly.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, then there's also nutrition services as well. So shout out to them. They just do an amazing job providing, the food to all the. To our staff and also to the patients and residents in our facility. So, a lab. I mean, I'm glad Violet is here because, I don't know if you know the volumes of the number of labs they're doing, but it's 400. So, did Violet leave already? Okay. But it's about 400 or so. I think we'll probably reach 500 is typically what we see with the health fair labs. So it's a large number. So thanks, Cindy.
So
I had a question, and this is going back to the RHTP funding, but and it's not an important question, but it's cool to see the shared resources, like with the critical access hospitals, but how does that work?
Oh, thank you for mentioning it. Yeah, that was actually something I was going to mention. That was one of the items I was missing on the verbal. Earlier in the week, not only did we have the meetings with the Alaska Hospital Association and the legislative meetings, but the first part of the week, we met with the hospitals. We have a HRSA networking grant, and Katie helped write for that. And that networking grant is to look at what we can share across three organizations, and there's three remaining community critical access hospitals in the state of Alaska, and that is South Peninsula Homer and Cordova and Petersburg Medical Center. And so we are working together on potentially some shared initiatives that we could either scale, work together on a service need, or other projects. There are two projects we identified. Well, one major project, one is a sort of a central medical office function, so a credentialing, peer review, potentially even a residency rotation program, ideally with the three hospitals, since that's a big need. You all see the credentialing files. That takes a long time to get those done, and we all have the same process, and we want to make sure we want to potentially be able to share that function. And the second thing that came out of sort of as a byproduct of that was a group purchasing a supply chain, shared supply chain, I believe that was mentioned. You mentioned that, yes, Cindy. You know, it was mentioned as a potential opportunity, and looking to see if we could share that across the three different organizations, and looking at scale, can we actually, you know, keep the cost down? We have better negotiating power with a supplier. Is there, you know, South Peninsula is a bigger facility. Between the three of us, we could have some negotiating power there.
Have you talked about dealing with insurance companies as a group?
Yeah, so there's a lot of projects we could do, and that we were looking at things we could actually do starting off, but absolutely that's on my mind. Those are a little more complicated, but I think we would have to have a proving concept on a shared initiative, a shared project that we have some data to say that we were able to move forward. Starting small and growing. I mean, I'd love to share electronic health record across the three of us. I mean, that would be a great opportunity as well. Billing functionality, you know, there's some opportunities. So anyway, those are more to come if it's successful.
Any other questions for Phil?
Not a question, but just a comment. Can you hear me?
Go ahead, Joe.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, just what stuck out in the report there from you, Phil, and I think Cindy touched on this with the financial committee meeting was the stepwise improvement to AR days. You know, in 10 months, it was 10 months ago, it was almost 100, and now it's down to, 54. So I think that's great news and really commendable.
Completely agree. I mean, it's to me, it's one of the most successful things it was so hard to move the needle on that. And I just want to thank the financial team, Jason, Joel, Carrie, I mean, Sarah, all the staff that work on that project. It's really incredible to see that come down. And a lot of organizations struggle with that still. And so that was a heavy, heavy lift. And yeah, I agree with you on that one for sure. Thank you for the comment.
Questions? Thank you, Phil. Katie, did you have anything to add on the grants updates page?
No, but I'm very happy to answer any questions if folks have them. I will say the grantee meeting in Georgia that I've been at has been our HRSA grant for the three critical access hospital projects. And while our network is smaller than most funded by this grant, I have to say our outcomes are pretty mighty, and that is because of the dedication of the leadership of those hospitals. And it's been, you know, it's been pleasing to see that in comparison to some of these networks, which while they are rural health networks, serve more people than we have in our entire state. So to see what's been achieved in Alaska is heartening.
Thank you. Financials.
Hello, everyone. Good evening. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So just run down through the statistics here. So clinic visits, fairly consistent over the last 3 months, kind of winter months, mid 700 range. Radiology procedures, doing normal, exact same as December. Lab tests are strong this year, but for the month of January, consistent with previous months. You know, we always see, you know, stronger volumes in the summer months with more people. You know, in the wintertime, you would think that we'd still see strong volumes with illness and things of that nature, but I think we do a good job of washing our hands and things of that nature. But rehab services, up just a little bit. Home health visits, 176. So I don't know, it's kind of the average. It goes up and down a little bit, staying there between the 660 and the 200 range. Emergency visits, very consistent for the winter months, in the 60s. Observation days, consistent. Acute care days down a little bit. You'll notice that when we get to the income statement. Swing bed days are okay. I wouldn't say they're exceptional, but it's good number at 53. And ICF, that's a patient waiting to get into the nursing home. Nursing home days, 396. So, you know, right there in that range, just over 400, near 400. So, normal, you know, it's an okay month for the winter months. Okay. Looking at our revenues, you can see here for the inpatient, it's a little below budget, a little below what it was a year ago. Outpatient is a little below as well. That's mainly because we had budgeted for the MRIs, a few of those a month. Long-term care, a little above. We are running full census, which is, you know, we always love providing patient care. It is a rebasing year, meaning, you know, next summer, the Medicaid, will be looking at our rates based upon our volumes and costs. And clinic revenues, just a little bit of under budget. Home health, okay. Some deductions, you know, as we were talking about here a minute ago, business office doing a very good job in collecting, reducing accounts receivable. We had reserved for some accounts, meaning we had set aside some numbers, anticipating having to write those off, but we collected on the accounts. So there's actually a bit of a credit coming through on the bad debts piece, that $78,000. That's why that's occurring. Collections have been, you know, very, very good, getting caught up, going from 100 days gross AR down to 60. I know between the month, you know, our rough number that we calculate on a day-to-day basis is hitting 55. Official number, the end of the month is 60. Other revenues, 340B down a little bit. As we saw, some of our volumes were down, but there's also a new program that went into effect in January. Medicare said, hey, they want their cut of 340B, and so they picked 10 drugs, and they get the benefit of that, not the hospital, the clinics. PERS USAC is up because of the work building, grant revenue, federal state relief, zero, other revenue. So expenses, total expenses here, just a little bit, about $40,000 above budget. Most of this, we had utilities a little stronger for the month, cold, and then also the new work building, some employee benefits, contract labor, trying to staff some different departments. Non-operating revenues, the investments have been strong. You know, when we look across the country and we say, if you're a hospital that is generating a bottom line, what's creating that bottom line for you? And there are very few producing a bottom line, and it's not being produced by patient care. It's being produced by 340B, and it's being produced by your returns on your income because of, you know, your endowment, your days cash on hand that you have. And we see the same for us. You know, we're reporting a net income, basically a loss, 105. And we will true this up because you get to this point, you get to, you know, 7, 8, months in the year and we do what's called an interim rate review. Our costs are up. Some of our volumes year to date are down a little bit. Indicates that Medicare owes us a little bit of money in the cost report. So anticipate some true up there. But, you know, by definition, when we say we're a critical access hospital, you know, it's a good thing and it's a bad thing. Medicare shares in our losses, but they also share in our gains. And so it takes a little bit out of both sides. So, but, you know, it helps us be solvent from year to year. It's a very important program that we're in.
Hey, Jason, can I ask a quick question?
Sure, go ahead.
Before you carry on. So the 340B, you mentioned that that's been an income source, and yet, well, with the policy change at the federal level that shifted that, and it showed a negative for this year, or for January, I mean, is that something we would expect to continue to see as a negative compared to budget based on the change legislatively?
Not a negative. We did generate $27,000 in income. There's I think what you're seeing here is the variance compared to what we had budgeted.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, and the rule of thumb is on this is when, because this is the revenue, the expense associated with this is down here under supplies, and there's some other transactional expenses, but it's usually around 50%. So if we say that we had $27,000 in revenues, half of that is what we net in terms of positive cash flows.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, there is a lot that Alaska can do, should do, to. So the big pharma is pushing back and implementing policies and trying to avoid having to participate in the 340B program. And different states, the federal government's not acted to strengthen it. And so different states have, and those states that have strengthened their 340B program, those hospitals are doing well. Alaska's not necessarily jumped in on that yet. Okay, so 48,000 negative here, mainly due to the depreciation expense caused, you know, from the work building. But once again, we'll get that money back when we do the interim rate review with Medicare. Year to date, we are showing a $4 million positive bottom line. Much of that has to deal with the grant project for the building. Not too much that I'll, you know, share on the balance sheet. We've got a very good cash position, $2.5 million in operating cash, $2 million in investments, short-term investments. And then down here we have another $4.8 million in long-term investments. So I'll just glance real quick at some of our statistics. Bad debt expense is a negative three. That's due to that credit. Operating margin, negative four. It's once again, deal with the cost report. We got to get caught up on that. These cash on hand, 134. If you recall, about 3 years ago, we were quite nervous about cash. We burned through quite a bit of it post-COVID, refunding some monies and things of that nature. But we've had a very strong strategic plan, very strong financial improvement plan, and especially the you know, bringing the business office in house and collecting on those balances is put monies back into our cash account. So days in AR gross, you can see a 60 industry standard. Hope to get a little bit lower than that on an official basis month end. Accounts payables caught up at 29 days. So doing strong. Got a few projects that the team is working on. There, as was indicated, they're looking to see if there's a better group purchasing organization out there. Always good to look at every 3 or 4 years. We have a strong program with Premier, but you got to keep them on their toes and look at the market. I think they're having some conversations with regards to our model of billing and compensation with Medicare for our clinic. So good to see that, but some little projects. We will quickly be getting into the budgeting process here this coming month and being prepared to deliver that by May or June. So those are the things that are happening. Lots of good service and good financial outcomes. Any questions?
Questions for Jason? Thank you, Jason. And I do want to note for the record that Heather did join the meeting earlier. Thank you, Jason.
You're welcome.
Under old business, it says see attached board resolution 26 or 2026-1. Did that need any action?
No, it's just for record keeping for the signed version to be on gotcha. File.
Okay. So we'll move on to new business PMC staff housing report. Just for the purpose of folks out there, I'll read a couple of things. Total housing expense for 2023, $226,537.24, $280,067, and for 2025, $357,971. And that includes rentals, fuel and utilities, repairs and maintenance. Currently, 2023, we had 17 apartments, 24, 17, and 2025, 22. This is just a housing report as we start the process of discussing housing needs in the community and what we may or may not be able to do. Are there any other comments on that report?
I'd just like to add that this report came out of the work session with the borough, and we didn't really get to discuss that at the work session, and I thought this would be something that would be noted of record of what the amount of housing or apartments that we rent in the community and that we need for housing and locum staff, nursing staff, physicians, any traveling staff that comes into Petersburg, that we have to house them and pay rent. And so that's just sort of the high level impact of our budget, and potentially maybe even having a further discussion with the assembly at a future date regarding housing opportunities.
Questions regarding this report? Thank you. Moving on to next meeting, Thursday, March 26th.
Jared, can I make a?
Yes.
I'm going to be traveling during that time for close up as a chaperone, and I'll be virtual on that meeting.
And I may or may not be here that week also.
I am not in the country at that time.
But there will be enough so it can still go on.
The March, yeah.
Yeah. Do I have a motion to go into executive session?
I'll make a motion to go into executive session.
Second.
Yeah, I guess I did. It's a motion to enter into executive session to consider medical staff appointments and reappointments and legal issues concerns. And did I have a second on that?
I second.